And we're going to take your phone calls this hour with Dr. Martin Blaser as we talk about missing microbes, how the overuse of antibiotics is fueling our modern plagues, and how true that is. We'll take your calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, we're back. Final hour with Dr. Martin Blaser as we talk about little microbes. Martin, have you ever looked at one of these little things under a microscope, an electronic microscope?
Sure.
What do they look like?
Well, some of them are round, like balls. Some of them are long, like magic wands. Some of them are curved. Some of them look like a triangle. Some of them look like an upside-down letter Y.
Huh.
They're lots of different shapes and sizes. And of course, the names are very... there are so many different kinds of bacteria.
Do they, this is strange, but I mean, since they're alive, I mean, do they have a mechanism for mobility? Do they swim? Do they walk? Do they have eyes?
Well, they have, they move, they can float, they have little tails, like they're wagging their tails, and that can move them along. They can sense where food is around. You know, the bacteria have all different kinds of genes, just like we have genes that encode for proteins that do their work. Most of human genes have evolved from those in bacteria.
How do they know where they're going?
They follow a concentration gradient. You know, if there's a path of sugar, let's just say, they'll follow that gradient to where it goes. There are some bacteria that have little pieces of iron in them, and they line up with the magnetic pole. I mean, and there are animals that use those bacteria to help them navigate.
What happens when the magnetic pole shifts? It's going to throw them all off.
Right. It doesn't shift that often.
That's funny. You know, unlike cancer cells thrive on sugar.
Yes, that's right.
Bacteria the same?
Yes, although they're, again, bacteria are unbelievably diverse. I told you that they're so different in shape and in size. There are certain bacteria that can't use sugar at all. They have to make it all themselves. They can't use it.
How do the bacteria create the resistance to the antibiotic?
It's not so much that they create it, but imagine that you have a population of, let's just say, 1,000 bacteria, and you apply penicillin. One of those bacteria might be naturally resistant to it. So the 999 will die, and one will be resistant, and now it will start to multiply, and it will fill up the space that those 1,000 had before. Now, instead of having 1 out of 1,000 resistant, you have 1,000 out of 1,000 resistant, something like that. And it depends on how the antibiotic works. Penicillin works against the cell wall, against the wall surrounding the bacteria. And some of these resistant bacteria have mutations so that there's no target for penicillin to hit them.
Do you recommend people take probiotics?
I don't.
You don't? How come?
Because I don't know what they are. There are hundreds of them in the stores on the shelves.
Could be good, could be bad.
Could be good. I think they're generally safe. I don't think that there's a big problem with them, but I don't know how effective they are. On the other hand, there are special cases where people who have had a variety of ailments have gotten better. In the book, I talk about a special case of a colleague of mine who had a very severe infection of her intestine it was very severe. She got treated with antibiotics. She got better. It came back. She got treated. Came back 5 times. She had never been ill before. In 2 years, she had 5 episodes. And then she started experimenting with probiotics, and she found one and hasn't had another episode since. So there are some cases in which it works, but in her case, it was a lot of trial and error.
What do you think of Cipro?
Cipro is an antibiotic. It's a good antibiotic. It has a lot of activity. Again, in general, we're overusing antibiotics. We're using, you mentioned tetracycline.
Mm-hmm.
That antibiotic has been used in teenagers to help them treat their acne, and that can be very effective. But there are some kids who don't have acne. They're taking tetracycline to prevent getting acne. They may be taking antibiotics every day for months.
And doesn't it also turn your teeth gray?
Well, it can, especially in young children.
Yeah.
It can.
That's what I heard. Okay, let's take some calls for you. Let's go to Jack in Park Ridge, Illinois on the wild card line. Jack, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure thing.
And I took the Cipro, and it made me really sick, and my arm started to shake, and I was diagnosed as getting Parkinson's and all of this by one doctor. And another doctor, who's not my doctor, I shoot model rockets with, he's at another hospital north of Chicago. He told me that the Cipro was the worst thing I could take, and so did one of your people on your show, Carola Dean or whatever her name was. I saw her at the convention, and I don't think there is one this year. Is that correct?
They haven't decided yet.
Oh, okay. And also, I just want to remind you that the LDRS is coming up, the big rocket launch in Wisconsin. I hope to see you in July.
I love rocket launches. Well, Martin, you know, with all this, how did you get involved personally in investigating infectious diseases and things like that?
You know, I trained as a doctor. I am a medical doctor. I wanted to take care of patients. In fact, I've been a doctor now for 41 years. I've taken care of lots and lots of patients. But in my training, I began to do research, to ask questions about how bacteria made people sick. And the more I studied it, the more interesting it got. And I was able to create some new blood tests to diagnose infection. We were able to better determine which bacteria caused which particular problems. And after a while, I was hooked. I enjoyed it so much that I began doing it in most of my time working in medical research.
Darlene in Cottonwood, California, west of the Rockies. Good morning, Darlene. Go ahead.
Yes. My granddaughter had a premature baby, 3 pounds, and she got C. diff. The baby didn't, but the mother did, got C. diff, and that was very hard for them to get rid of that. She also had a number of other problems, some blood clots and Crohn's disease, and so will that prevent her from being able to have another child?
No, hopefully she can get over that C. diff, but that C. diff is an infection that is almost always caused by taking antibiotics. The antibiotics change the balance in the intestinal tract, and it allows a bad bacteria like C. diff to get in, and then it's very hard to eliminate it. Some people can have multiple recurrence after recurrence. For C. diff, in fact, there's been a new treatment, which, if you don't mind my telling you, it's called fecal transplant. And that's these are people who are really sick. They've had recurrent diseases, and they've taken specimens from healthy people and given it to these ill people, and they've made them well. It's not something we recommend to do at home. The FDA is regulating it. But for some people, it's been the difference between life and death.
They say, I'm the old Thanksgiving turkey cooker, that you have to cook that turkey at a certain degrees or the bacteria can get you.
Yeah, right. Now, you don't want to cook it at 1,000 degrees because then you'll kill all the meat and all the flavor.
Yeah,
but
that's right.
If you cook it at a few hundred degrees, then the heat will get all the way through the turkey into the interior, because sometimes people get ill because they cook it just on the surface, and deep down there are bacteria that have come during the slaughtering process.
So heat does kill bacteria.
Heat will kill virtually every bacteria.
What does a dead bacterium look like?
Under the microscope, it may be decomposed. Instead of a perfectly round ball, it may look frayed. It may look just like that round ball, but it's still dead.
Do they communicate with each other?
They do. The bacteria have developed a whole series of signals so that they know which bacteria are around them, whether they're bacteria of the same species or different species. So they invented this kind of communication.
Amazing.
Between cells. But again, this is good bacteria and bad bacteria. They're all doing it.
Would you say that bacteria is intelligent?
Well, certainly,
if you drop an antibiotic in there, would they literally communicate with each other? You know, like, oh, here it comes. Get away, run.
It may be, you know, some people think they're more intelligent than we are. So, many people think that the bacteria will inherit the earth. So, we have to use our wits. We have to use our brains so that we can live peacefully with bacteria. We can control the bad ones and learn to cooperate with the good ones.
Greensboro, North Carolina. Bill's with us on the wild card line. Hi, Bill. You're up.
Hi there.
Hi,
doctor. I took, I'm very leery of antibiotics. I took them about 15 years ago with a candida infection. Took me years to get over it. That eventually led to rheumatoid arthritis. Now, I've been using colloidal silver, and I've had very good results. I haven't had any antibiotics in 10 years, and I've had a urinary tract infection, which is getting very bad. Within 2 or 3 days, it wiped it right out. I've used it for my rheumatoid arthritis recently in fairly large amounts, and it's been amazing.
What do you think of natural abilities like that, Martin?
Well, you know, people have been using heavy metals like silver and gold to treat infections for centuries. So silver has antibacterial properties also. It's a kind of antibacterial, so I'm not surprised that your infection got better with silver.
How did the ancients, the shamans, the medicine men, people like that, how did they know that these kinds of ingredients, natural, would be able to fight off certain illnesses and diseases?
Yeah, trial and error. I mean, in South America, the Indians there discovered quinine. They found that there's certain, when there was malaria, they found that if they ate the leaves of certain plants, those people wouldn't die of malaria. Same thing in China. They found a certain certain plant, or timothyn, helped treat malaria. Now we purify it from the plant. That's become one of the leading treatments of malaria.
Marin, California. Turn. It's Gracie. Hi, Grace.
Hi, George. I'm so glad that you're on. It's a lot to me.
Until the end of time, Grace.
Be able to hear you. It's kind of interesting because when he answered my call, they hit on the advertisement for the garlic.
Mm-hmm.
That your station advertises.
It chases away vampires, so I guess it chases away all kinds of things.
Well, I read in a couple of different places years ago, and for 40 years I never had a cold, the flu, or nothing. My kids call it my witch's brew. A large clove of garlic, a few sprigs of fresh parsley, and the juice of half a lemon, pure water, and you put in the cup and steep it for about 3 to 5 minutes, and I used to drink that every day. And I've been allergic to chemicals many years. In fact, a nurse bullied me into taking a flu shot, and I had never had a flu shot.
Uh-huh.
I had years and years ago, and I got the flu. In fact, from my vaccination, I got cowpox.
Wow.
Because for three weeks, I just laid in bed. I was so sick. In any case, garlic, I've read in more than one place, in old books. I have 20 boxes of books that are old medical books.
Oh, yeah, you've got some of the classics in there, I bet.
Yes. And it's the one thing. I'm an artist, and then I ended up getting certified in therapeutic massage. And I had a friend about 40 years ago get cancer. And they went to start radiation and chemotherapy. And something I read years ago, too, is that a huge amount, like about 90% of cancer, is caused from chemical stress in the body. And my question is, why do they give chemicals? In fact, in 4 months, I took off all animal products, did a 3-day citrus fast, 3-day liver cleanse, and she did a 2-week fast. In 4 months, they couldn't find a trace.
Oh, you're kidding. Fantastic.
Yeah. And I don't understand why.
Well, you know, and let me tell you, Grace, and also you, Dr. Martin Blazer, some folks at City of Hope Cancer Research Center, they've told me that chemotherapy is one of the worst ways to fight cancer. But as far as they're concerned, that and radiation, that's all they had available at that point. I think
fortunately, there newer tools are being developed that are not as toxic as chemotherapy. There's some patients who are really sick who have terrible diseases, leukemia, and if you don't treat them, they're going to die. So you try to make the treatment appropriate to the illness. Again, it's one of the reasons I'm against the overuse of antibiotics, because people who have very mild illnesses are getting antibiotics. They don't need to. They're going to get better all by themselves.
And there are some natural things, foods like garlic and things like that, that can work.
Yeah, people have been using garlic for centuries to help with infections, and seems to work. But again, a lot of these things get better by themselves.
Let's go to Jason in Charlotte, North Carolina. Hi, Jason. Thank you for holding. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Hi, Dr. Martin. Just want to share with you, or actually I want to ask you, doctor, about a natural sugar called xylitol. George, I know that you're big into natural stuff. You might want to write this down. It's
okay.
X-Y-L-I-T-O-L. And I found out about it because I was a practice patient or guinea pig at USC in Charleston. And one of the professors was giving a lecture, and he mentioned this natural derived sugar that kills different types of strep mutans and other various types of viruses and bacteria. And ever since then, my world has just changed because I've used it to cure some of our infants' ear infections. I use that to cure sinus infections that I have. And I wanted to get your take on, you know, is the medical world really aware of xylitol, and how does it interact on a level to where it kills the bacteria or different viruses like that?
Martin, can you answer that?
Well, I can partially answer it, and that is that xylitol is a kind of sugar, as you say, and there are certain bacteria that love that xylitol. And it could be that in the cases you're talking about, by giving the xylitol, you've encouraged the growth of certain good bacteria, which have fought the bad bacteria. That's one of the reasons that antibiotic use is so dangerous, because our good bacteria are the front line of defense against bad bacteria. They're like the Coast Guard, inside and out of us. And we want to respect them and have them do the work for us.
Do our white blood cells attack bad bacteria?
They do. Our white blood cells are part of our defenses against bad bacteria. So that's a kind of immunity that we well know. And our lymphocytes, our T cells, are also fighting against bad bacteria. But so are our friendly bacteria. They're our first line of defense.
We're going to come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM. And we will take final phone calls with Dr. Martin Blaser, Missing Microbes. I'm George Norrie, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, you are the placebo making your mind matter with Dr. Joe Dispenza. But when we come back with Dr. Martin Blaser, let's take some final phone calls as we talk about missing microbes. Welcome back, Dr. Martin Blaser with us. Martin, tell me a little bit about the asthma effect with antibiotics.
Well, we're really, again, interested, especially in young kids. Asthma, as everybody knows, asthma has been getting more frequent in recent years, especially childhood onset asthma. That's the asthma that begins in young kids. And we have evidence from studies in kids and, that changing in their good bacteria is making that at higher risk for getting this asthma. And there have been studies done in the laboratory in mice showing the same thing. Loss of good bacteria, changing how the immune system works, making them susceptible to asthma.
Back to the phones we go. Les is in Wahoo, Nebraska. Hey, Les, go ahead.
Well, good morning, everybody.
Morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for taking my call. I've been like a cheerleader here, just thoroughly enjoying this conversation. I have much respect for this particular doctor because so many of them, I think, are ignorant about natural stuff. They've just been trained up or raised up by the pharmaceutical industry without their control, which is kind of sad. But one of the callers touched on what I was going to say, but I kind of wanted to, my part is a little bit different, but I took the guidance of one of the guests that you had probably 10 years ago, probably when Art Bell was there, and Dr. Leonard Horowitz.
Oh, yeah. We've and had Len on quite a bit.
Yeah, he was talking about this antibiotic thing a decade or so ago, and it made a lot of sense. So I acted on that, and I got some batteries and pieces of wood, and I bought some silver rods, and I just started making my own colloidal silver. And I've cured myself of strep throat, and I'm one of those people. I had bronchitis real bad as a child, so when I would get sick, it would go immediately to my lungs. And, I mean, I'd be out for a month. And so I've even tried putting the colloidal silver in one of those nebulizers so I can get that in my lungs, and that solved it. And I guess I'm just doing nothing but natural stuff. I called not long ago to let you guys know about the diatomaceous earth. So I've been taking that. Only when I get sick, I'll do the colloidal silver. And the other gal was talking about garlic, and, you know, I'll drink vinegar, and there's all kinds of natural stuff. I drink lemon juice, fresh squeezed lemon juice, every morning with a glass of purified water with the diatomaceous earth in it. My wife right now is in bed sick, and she's been sick for a couple weeks. And I've been around her, and I haven't had any problem whatsoever. So I was curious what the doctor would say. Is the diatomaceous earth, will that possibly affect bacteria? Because I know it kills bugs.
You know, it might. It might kill the bacteria, but, you know, many times you know that when somebody in the household is ill, it doesn't necessarily mean that everybody else is going to get ill. There are some things that are more communicable than others, and that diatomaceous earth could have worked for you, or it's just good luck.
What about airplane diseases? You get that recirculated air?
Yeah.
You get sick.
Yeah, well, there have been cases where somebody on this plane is sick, they're coughing, and the people around them start coughing too. That's particularly bad during the respiratory and flu season. Those are the things that are the most communicable. You know, during the summer, it's not quite as bad.
We've got first-time caller Bart, Lawrence, Kansas. Good morning, Bart. Thank you for calling.
Hi.
Hi, Bart.
George, long-time listener. I'm really glad to get through tonight.
Great. Thank you.
I just wanted to kind of mention, a couple of your callers have already talked about some other natural remedies like colloidal silver, which bacteria in particular don't seem to have an ability to develop an immunity to. But there are several other things out there that people can use either before resorting to antibiotics or after antibiotics have failed. Those include things like mushrooms, which have certain types of mushrooms like Tiaga or Fomatopsis pinicola, which boost the neutrophil and macrophage production in the body, which is two major portions of your immune system, by 2,000 and 4,000% respectively. Things like essential oils, such as rose oil, primrose oil, oil of oregano, or thieves oil, which was used successfully in the Dark Ages to prevent contracting the Black Death. So, and these are the kinds of things that are available that bacteria out there don't seem to be able to develop immunities against that we have today.
Yeah, so there are many natural substances that have antibacterial effects. The whole history of the world has been marked by plants. You know, plants don't want to get eaten by bacteria either, so they have antibacterial materials. Same with many animals. They have antibacterial materials in their skin. As was mentioned before, soil. There are antibacterial substances there. So the history of life on Earth is the history of fighting with and sometimes cooperating with bacteria. So we've got to figure out where's the right place to draw the line.
How did nature, Martin, create so many different organisms, humans, plants, that understood how to fight back?
You know, that's where Charles Darwin was so smart. He understood the central principle of biology, which is survival of the fittest. Over enough years, there was variation, and that the mouse that grew up that could resist a certain bacteria, that mouse would have babies, and the other mice would die, and their genes would be gone, and that mouse with the good genes would be living. And that's kind of how it's happened since there's been life on Earth.
Is there an age bracket that is stronger to fight off some of these illnesses and bacteria?
You know, generally, people, high teenagers, young adults, that's kind of the prime of life. They're almost indestructible. And then, you know, young kids have more problems. The older you get, you have more problems as well. So one of the goals is to keep our young people pretty healthy and not keep pumping them up with antibiotics.
Next up, let's go to Chris in Waterloo, Iowa. Chris, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. I just had a question and a comment.
Sure.
I wanted to ask about garlic. I've been taking garlic every day, about 5 or 6 cloves. I just crush it up and I sprinkle it on my food. And I just wanted to say, like, for anybody that has an ulcer out there, it really helps. I mean, I had it for a year. I was having pains. I was sick. I started doing crushed garlic, and 2 days it went away and never came back. And also, I just had a question. I was wondering if raw garlic was good for your arteries. I heard it loosens up the plaque. And so I was just curious about that.
It's supposed to, Martin, isn't it?
Yeah, people have been using garlic for hundreds of years, and in recent years there have been scientific tests. Garlic is clearly antibacterial, and that's possibly why it helped clear up your ulcer, because we know that that bacteria play a role in ulcers. Could garlic clear up arteries? I'm not aware of actual studies of it, but it's certainly in the realm of possibility.
There is a drug used for people who have cancer called Vismodegib. Have you heard of that?
I haven't.
Okay. I don't know how that works or if that's good or bad. But people who already have a threatened immune system, what does an antibiotic do to it?
It depends why the antibiotic is given. You know, there are some people who have a threatened immune system who develop very serious infections because their immunity can't fight back. Those people need antibiotics because the antibiotic, in some cases, can be life-saving. On the other hand, if somebody has lowered immune system and they're perfectly well, giving an antibiotic might actually help make them sick. So it's not... Fortunately, in the United States, antibiotics are regulated. You have to have a doctor's prescription to get one. Again, the doctors are using too many antibiotics. But in some countries, you can just get antibiotics over the counter. In China, antibiotics are completely free, and people are taking 2 to 4 times as many antibiotics as we're taking.
Well, that's not good, then.
It's not good at all. And all over the world where people are taking a lot of antibiotics, we're seeing kids getting fat.
Let's go to Mike in State College, Pennsylvania, east of the Rockies. Mike, go ahead.
Hey, George. Good morning. Doc.
Good morning.
The discussion you just had about the too much antibiotics and people getting sick or having somebody with an immune system that might be a challenge. Uh-huh. I dropped off a friend at the ER prior. She had cellulitis before, went in for a course of antibiotics. I dropped her off. She literally got out of the car and under her own motion walked into the ER. Came back to check on her. The doctor didn't check on what type of course they gave her before. Gave her vancomycin via IV. Pretty much went into renal failure right then and there. 72 hours to live. Was talking to a kidney specialist. A renal specialist, and he stating that she's going to be gone by Sunday. And I was just gobsmacked. Vancomycin and its derivatives, is that something that she should always be leery of you know, antibiotics? Like you said, there's psyllins, then there's this psyllin. Is that the same with vancomycin? Does it have cousins or derivatives of that one should be very leery of?
Sure. Well, vancomycin is kind of in its own family. There are some cousins, but they're not used very often. And again, that's the terrible case you're mentioning of your friend is kind of an example of the two faces of antibiotics. Vancomycin is a very powerful antibiotic, and it can treat some very serious infections, but it also can be damaging. It can damage the kidneys, as you say, and of course, it also can change the good bacteria. It can, in addition to eradicating the bad bacteria, it can get rid of a lot of the good ones that are part of protection against the recurrent infection.
Martin, tell us about that study of those cities in Michigan and Ohio in the water system.
Well, studies have been done over the last 20-something years that have looked at water systems in many places in the Midwest where there are these industrial-scale farms where they're using so much antibiotics, it's going out in their effluent water. It's in the water supply of rivers, and then the intakes are for a number of cities are taking in the antibiotics. There's no good way to leach the antibiotics out of the water, so they're just being delivered to people in their drinking water. And in some cases, the levels have been pretty high. Again, as far as I know, there's never been any study about what the consequence of that
no.
is. It could
but it
be,
can't be good.
It could be. I don't think it can be good. It could be negligible. It could be so low concentrations that it doesn't make much of a difference, mm-hmm. or it could be bad, or it could be cumulative. That's the whole idea, is that the more antibiotics you take, the more messed up your good bacteria are.
Let's go to Michelle in Milwaukee. Hey, Michelle, how are you?
Hi, George. I'm good. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
This is the first time I've called. I just wondered, I know that the use of hand sanitizers and antibacterial wipes and soaps, has that had an impact on the infections and the when my kids were young, they're now in their 20s. When they were young, we didn't have that stuff, but in the last several years, all the moms have their kids using a hand sanitizer before they eat. I guess it helps.
I don't know. I don't know that it helps. I mean, again, people are doing it. This is part of what I call, in Missing Microbes, I call this germophobia, that people are so afraid of germs that they think that all the germs in the world are bad for them. They may be getting rid of some of the good bacteria that are on their kids' hands. So
right. I think my kids ate dirt. I'm not sure, I'm pretty sure they did. And they're healthy.
We really need to study this because it's being done tens of millions of times every day. And the thing about antibiotics is that they're used so much. It's on a really big scale. It's not like these are rare drugs. Again, the CDC data... 5 courses of antibiotics every year for every 6 people.
Yeah.
Almost one per person.
My daughter had repeated ear infections when she was little, and she did take a lot of antibiotics. She took, the amoxicillin, of course, but then I think she was on, it gave her diarrhea, so she was only on that for a little while. But, I mean, they used that for ear infections, and then she ended up getting tubes, and for a while she didn't need the antibiotics. But I know that she did take quite a few when she was young, not so much as she's grown older.
Well,
I hope that doesn't have a huge impact.
You know, I hope so that it doesn't either. We just don't know, but the average child in the United States gets 10 courses of antibiotics by the time they're 10, and in Sweden they're only getting 4. And those kids seem
there's
to be
that
doing,
difference again that you keep
those
talking
kids,
about.
Those kids seem to be doing just as well. Well, it shows that if we put our mind to it collectively, we could lower antibiotic use. That involves the medical profession and the nurses and patients too. And that's why I wrote Missing Microbes, to change the dialogue, because these drugs are not without biological cost.
So what's your recommendation to someone listening to the show right now? Maybe they have an infection. Maybe they need antibiotics. What do they do?
You know, that's why we have a great medical system in this country, and that's why we have doctors and clinics and emergency rooms. People feel that their health is bad. They feel that they have a bad infection or their child has a bad infection. They should seek medical help, and they that person should be evaluated to see whether they have an infection that will benefit from antibiotics, or whether it won't, or whether it's not even an infection. So many times people come to the doctor thinking that they have an infection. It's not an infection. Therefore, antibiotics isn't going to help them.
Ben is in Woodland Hills, California. Hey, Ben, let's squeeze you in here. Go ahead.
Hey, George. Hey, great. Great. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
You kept me up many of night with some great shows.
Many to come.
Many to come. Absolutely. I called in. I know you're not on the subject of cancer, but I heard the word come up a few times, and I wanted to know a few things. One, have you ever heard of Dr. Stanley Brzezinski out of Texas?
Yes, he's got a great clinic down there.
Exactly. And has he ever been on your show?
I can't remember if he was with me. I've interviewed over 4,000 people, but I don't think he has.
I would love to have him on your show. I know he's doing some great work. I've seen his video, his documentary on YouTube, and his work with antineoplastones. And I don't know if you're aware, but the FDA, after so many battles in court, they actually came to the conclusion, they actually admitted that his work with antineoplastones actually does cure cancer. They actually use the cure word and not treat or have people
and
live
that's
with.
Highly unlike them doing that. We're out of time for this hour. Martin, I want to thank you for being on the show, and good luck with the work Missing Microbes. Much needed.
Thank you so much, George. My pleasure.
All right. And we're going to come back in just a moment as we continue with You Are the Placebo. Does your mind have the ability to heal? A dramatic story just ahead on Coast to Coast AM.